Hey, I'm Brett Podolsky, co-founder of The Farmer's Dog. We make fresh food for dogs. We started the company when we saw what a huge difference it made in my own dog, Jada, when she stopped eating ultra-processed kibble and started eating fresh, whole food. The Farmer's Dog food isn't fancy. It's just real food delivered to your door in pre-portioned packs. It's better for them and easier for you.
Get 50% off your first box at thefarmersdog.com/podcast. That's thefarmersdog.com/podcast.
Hey, Keely.
Hey, Chris.
Welcome to Heard It on the Sidelines.
Heard It
on the Sideline with Shotgun Spratling.
Welcome to another edition of the Heard It on the Sidelines podcast with Shotgun Spratling. Thanks again to Keely and Chris for the intro, and thanks to everyone that is returning to listen. For those first-timers out there, the Heard It on the Sidelines podcast is a part of the Peristyle podcast family. It's the podcast where we discuss what's going on at USC, but also try to pull back the curtain to give you an insider's perspective from the people around the USC athletic programs. On today's episode, we're virtually heading to Indianapolis, where the USC basketball team is currently locked up in a hotel, quarantining along with several other teams, awaiting the start of the NCAA tournament this weekend. The 22-7 Trojans were awarded the number 6 seed in the West region, where they await the winner of the first 4 game between Wichita State and Drake, which will be played on Thursday night. The 6 seed is the highest ever for Andy Enfield and the highest for the USC program since 2008. The Trojans have only had a higher seed 3 times since the NCAA began the seeding process in 1979. Their highest seed came in 1992 when Harold Miner led the team to a number 2 seed and a 24-6 record, producing the best win percentage for a USC team until, well, this year. But in 1992, the Trojans didn't make it past the opening weekend, losing a heartbreaking 1-point loss to Georgia Tech. USC was also upset in 2002 as a number 4 seed and then in 2008 as a number 6 seed. But it hasn't been all upsets when USC's earned a quality seed. The Trojans' last Sweet 16 trip came in 2007 as a number 5 seed, and USC's lone Elite 8 appearance in the last 60 years came in 2001 when the Trojans were also a number 6 seed, just like this year. Could the Trojans get some 20-year magic going? Well, we'll talk with former USC star player Desmond Farmer, a freshman on that 2001 team, to get his opinion on that very subject. Desmond has a very unique perspective, having played on the Elite Eight 2001 team, the 2002 team that was upset by UNC Wilmington, and he's also now on the staff with the Trojans as a graduate assistant. Farmer finished off his undergraduate degree last year and has been working on his master's in communication management while also working to help make this year's USC Trojan squad a better team. Along with bringing a ton of energy to the gym every day, just like when he was a player, Farmer does a lot of individual skill work with the players to help them refine their game, and he also tries to impart some of the wisdoms he learned during his career. The former All-Pac-12 and All-Pac-12 tournament guard averaged more than 19 points per game in his final 2 seasons at USC before moving on to a professional basketball career that lasted more than a decade. He played in the NBA, but he also traveled all over the world playing in a number of different countries and immersing himself in a number of unique cultures. We'll talk to Farmer about the life lessons basketball has taught him, his experiences in the NCAA tournament, what advice he's given the players this week, and why he thinks USC can make a run to its first Final Four since 1954. The Michigan native also discusses why his love for the Cardinal and gold has never waned, the tough decision he had to make with his family when deciding to coach this season, and what he's taken out of this experience that will help him one day become a head coach himself. But first, I want to start with my 2 positives and a negative. Since we're talking USC basketball, we got to start with Evan Mobley. Last week, Evan Mobley became the first player in Pac-12 history to ever win Player of the Year, Defensive Player of the Year, and Freshman of the Year all at the same time. It was a historic triple win, as the only other time someone has won Player of the Year, Defensive Player of the Year, Freshman of the Year, all in the same season in a major conference was when LA Lakers big man Anthony Davis did it while he was at Kentucky. Mobley was also just the second freshman in Pac-12 history to win Defensive Player of the Year, joining Oregon State's Gary Payton. Pretty good company there. He's just the 4th player to win Pac-12 Player of the Year and Freshman of the Year in the same season, along with DeAndre Ayton, Kevin Love, and Sharif Abdur-Rahim. So, again, pretty good company there. Mobley's the 4th Trojan to be named the Conference Player of the Year and the first since Sam Clancy in 2001-2002, who was also the last Associated Press All-American from USC before Mobley also earned that honor on Tuesday. We're talking about Mobley's aggression, though. And when I'm talking about his aggression, we're not talking about him aggressively hoarding all the trophies and all the awards. Much more important for the next 3 weeks of action, though, was Mobley's aggressive attacking play in the Pac-12 tournament. Evan Mobley showed that he understands what time of year it is. It's March. It's time to go. And that he's not afraid of the spotlight. Against a pair of teams that he struggled with to produce some big outings earlier in the season, you know, didn't even take a shot against Utah in the first time those two teams matched up, Mobley was a monster over the weekend in Las Vegas in the Pac-12 tournament. Foul trouble initially limited him in USC's first game of the tournament against Utah, but after halftime, he was a dominant force, scoring 24 of his career-high 26 points and fouling out multiple Utah defenders that tried to guard him. They had no answer for him. When the game with Utah went to overtime and then double overtime, Mobley carried the Trojans. He wouldn't let USC lose. He scored 13 of the team's 20 points in those two extra periods. Then against Colorado the next night, Mobley carried the Trojans for an entire half. He scored 17 of the team's 30 points in the first half. He was the only one that kind of brought it in the first half and kept USC in the game and did everything he could. He tied his career high that he set a day earlier with another 26 points. He also had 9 rebounds and blocked 5 shots. Not in the Utah game, not in the Colorado game, in both of those games. 9 rebounds, 5 block shots, 26 points in both games. Tremendous performance for him. He affected every facet of the game on both ends of the court. That's what USC is going to need from him going into the NCAA tournament. The second positive, maybe is a question mark. Gained experience through tough lessons. This could be a big positive for USC, or could be what we look back at next week and say, that's what they should have learned from. The Trojans lost by 2 points in the Pac-12 tournament semifinals to Colorado after their double overtime win against Utah. That followed a dramatic come-from-behind win at UCLA in their regular season finale. Those are 3 games where it's down to the crunch time, down to the last shot, and they came out ahead in 2 of those. After barely having any close game experience outside of being pushed by Cal Baptist and UC Riverside in games where USC really struggled, actually, the Trojans got 3 straight tight contests, and from those 3 games, they should be able to take away just how important all the details are. In the Crosstown Showdown against UCLA, neither team could make some free throws late. You know, either team could have pulled away if either one of them would have shot a little bit better. Against Utah, the Trojans struggled from the line again in crunch time. After being solid the first 35 minutes of the game or so, it let Utah creep back in and force overtime. And the game against Utah should have showed USC how important it is to go for the jugular. Put a team away. Don't let them hang around to where they can even the score up with 2.3 seconds left in regulation. And then again in overtime with a big 3-pointer out of a timeout. That's how you get 10 extra minutes when you should have been able to finish it off early. But the biggest lessons should come from the game they lost. USC rallied after, you know, giving up a 17-0 run in the first half. They came all the way back to tie the game with 35 seconds left, only to lose on a putback slam in the final seconds. There's a list of probably 6 to 10 things that if USC just did a little bit better, it would have won. It's a game of missed opportunities for USC. The Trojans had 2 technicals that gave away free points. They gave up some open looks from 3. They lost the rebounding margin. They went 6-for-12 from the free throw line. They had an 8-minute drought that was exacerbated by the fact that Colorado's dynamic point guard, McKinley Wright, wasn't available, which should have been the prime time for USC to go on a run. And the Trojans only had 2 players finishing double figures for the game, which has been one of the most telling stats for USC this season. They're 19-0 when 3 or more players finish in double figures versus only 3-7 when 2 or fewer players finish in double figures. So got to get multiple players to 10 points in the NCAA tournament. If the Trojans really take that loss to heart against Colorado, they take that to heart, let it fuel their focus on the details. It could be just what they needed heading into the NCAA tournament. USC's really responded well to most of its losses this season. It's averaged a 17-point victory in the game following its 6 previous losses, and that's including the loss to Utah, factoring it into that 17-point total as well. Now the negative. USC is entering the NCAA tournament just 4-4 in their last 8 games after starting 18-3. During that stretch, they've been very inconsistent with the intensity and energy that they come out with at the start of the game. It's been off the charts in a couple of games against Oregon, against Stanford, huge leads early. It's been pathetic in a couple others. Just no energy, no defensive intensity out on the court, and it's cost them early, and they've had to try to catch up. USC had a rally against UCLA. They had a rally in that Colorado loss. They struggled mightily on the mountain trip, and then they got redemption against Utah in the quarterfinals of the Pac-12 tournament, though it did take them until double overtime before they were finally able to finish off the Utes, who Tuesday fired head coach Larry Krystkowiak after missing the NCAA tournament for the 5th straight year. They still weren't able to get over the hump against Colorado, who's won 7 in a row against USC now, including 3 of USC's 7 losses this season. But I guess the positive news is the Trojans can't meet the Buffaloes until the Final Four. There's no way that they can match up in the bracket until at least the Final Four. So they can avoid McKinley Wright, avoid Jariah Horn's three-pointers and Tad Boyle, and still make a run in the NCAA tournament. But they have to lock in immediately. Don't wait till tomorrow. Right now, even before they know who their opponent is on Thursday, and then from the opening tip on Saturday, you know, the 2001 team that went to the Elite Eight, they had lost 4 of 6 in late February, including a 45-point shellacking by Arizona. Then they had an overtime win. Sound familiar? But then right after that, they lost by 2 to a really tough opponent. Again, does that sound familiar? Before they won their final 3 games of the regular season heading into the NCAA tournament, and they won 3 games in the NCAA tournament to get to the Elite Eight. So again, gotta ask, could there be a little 20-year anniversary magic with this group? Let's welcome in our guest today, Desmond Farmer, former USC player, former NBA player, played professionally, now back at USC. Just recently got his degree last year, now working on his master's degree with USC and on the coaching staff as a grad manager, grad assistant, and helping out with the team. And, you know, he's in a familiar place in the NCAA tournament, somewhere where he spent some time as a player at USC as well. So wanted to get him on to talk about his experience in the NCAA tournament as well as his experience coaching with this year's team. So, Desmond, welcome to the show, and thanks for joining us.
Thank you for having me. I'm glad to be here. Anything for the Trojan family.
I know you're a big, you know, you're a big USC guy. You still post, you know, various USC stuff even before you came back to finish up your degree last year and to work on your master's degree this year. Why have you been such a big USC fan as well as, you know, just a Trojan family member? Why has that been so important to you?
It's been important to me because I worked hard. I did a lot of sweating and crying for the university, you know, going through a lot of stuff and trying to help us win and being on the winning situation. And, you know, I respect the alumni and I respect how everybody is all as a family. And it just makes me want to continue to be around it.
Yeah, I was kind of curious just what sold you on coming to USC initially. You're from Flint, Michigan, and, you know, decided to come out west and go to USC. What sold you coming out of high school?
You know, I had an injury when I was coming out, going into my senior year, and a lot of schools have disappeared. I was one of the top players in the country. At one point, I was number one, number two shooting guard in the country. And when I got injured, I tore my ACL, a lot of schools disappeared. And USC just stuck it out. They stuck it out with me. They kept checking on me, seeing how I was doing, how was my recovery going. And I just felt like that helped me make my decision because I seen that they really was interested in having me. So it made my decision a lot easier.
You come to USC and your first year, your freshman year, you were able to contribute and help a team that made the deepest run in NCAA tournament history for USC, made it to the Elite Eight in 2001. To going up against the eventual national champion Duke was the team that beat you guys in the Elite Eight. Going through that run, what do you remember most?
Shoot, I just remember how the people in the state of New York was just excited about our success. You know, walking the street and people noticing you and just being excited and cheering for you. I remember that. I remember those moments. Just people being excited that you're there and being a Cinderella team, which they considered we was at that time, and just enjoying the ride.
It's interesting. You were on both sides kind of the Cinderella story. You made the run to the Elite Eight, but then the next year, USC loses in overtime in the first round to UNC Wilmington. Which tournament experience did you think you learned most from?
I think my freshman year. I think my freshman year, when we made it to the Elite Eight, I learned a lot knowing I didn't play that many minutes. You know, Coach Bibby, you know, he only played 5 to 6, 6 to 7 guys. He wasn't a big rotation. So I was able to just learn a lot. I got a little minutes here and there, did my part for the team. And I was just able to learn. So when we got to that second tournament, I was able to be a lot of help for Sam Clancy and Brandon Grailville and David Blutenthal. and contribute the way I knew I could.
Yeah, you've obviously seen, you know, the positives and the negatives of the NCAA tournament. You play with some really good players. Sam Clancy, like you mentioned, who was an All-American for the Associated Press. Evan Mobley today was named to the second team All-American team as well. Tell me about watching this year's group. Where do you see things that are relatable? What makes you think that maybe this team can make a run in the NCAA tournament?
This year, I think we got a special group. I mean, I like our guys. We long. We one of the biggest teams in college basketball this year. And I think that right there alone, it gives you an advantage. You know, having mm-hmm. the height, being able to go inside and be able to perform and be at a high level. These guys have been working their tail off. You know, we was picked 6th or 7th in the league this year, and we surprised everybody by finishing second. Had an opportunity to finish first. So I just think our success is just on us. And I think the guys is locked in. We got smart guys. We got our guys love each other. And I can feel the energy that we can do something special right now. So I think we can get further than what we did when I was at USC in 2001 when we went to the Elite Eight. I truly believe that. That's the goal, and that's my goal, is to get this team further than what I did when I was in 2001. And they got the opportunity, and we got the talent. And you got to take advantage of when you having this. You don't come across this type of talent all the time, and we just got to take advantage of it. It's a great opportunity for us down here. And it's all about just being excited and being prepared. And that's what I keep preaching to the guys. It's just about being prepared and ready to go.
I know USC fans would love to see you guys get moved out of the, you know, pushed back in the record book from being the deepest run, and would love to see that as well. What do you think is the key to this year's team making a run? You know, especially with the experience you had, you've seen what key components are on a team that can make a run. What makes this team, you know, what's the key for this year's group to be able to do that?
I think we got a lot of quiet guys. Like fire's quiet. And I think if we talked a little more, which I've been working on with them in practice, just getting them to talking and communicating to each other and letting each other know that you got each other's back. And I think once we get to that stage and get over and get in that mode of the game, I think it can take us to another level. But right now, our energy, I feel like our energy kicks out slow sometimes, and if we can change that and come out to the games and start strong at the beginning of the game, we can be a special team down here.
How different do you feel like the environment's going to be? Just the fact that the entire tournament's going to be held in the same area. There's going to be, I think there's no fans allowed, maybe limited fans, but it's not going to be, you know, the packed house. You're not going to have the, you know, the Cinderella teams getting that push from the entire crowd kind of gathering around and cheering them on. How different do you think the environment will be this year?
I think it will be less exciting. I think it's going to be more of us coming as a group to get that energy going because of not having that crowd and that energy like normal. But I think other than that, being here, you got to be excited. You know, it's another season. It's another opportunity. I know guys want to do things after basketball, after this, and this will help them. This will help you get to the next level, help you get other opportunities. And it's a great situation. So having the crowd, a little bit of crowd, will keep that energy up. But you got to be excited to be here, regardless of having a crowd or not. And I think that's going to be the hardest adjustment for these teams down here.
Yeah, you got to bring your own energy this year. You know, the bench has got to be involved and be a part of it. Is that something that did you take upon yourself as well to help try to bring that energy on the bench?
Yeah, that's what I wanted to bring to the team, exactly, is that the energy and just keeping them upbeat, because I know it's hard to play when you don't have that crowd, and I know a lot of guys feed off the crowd. So, I mean, I just try to be excited for the guys, keep their energy up. When I feel like they being down, I just keep them up. You know, I talk to them on halftime speeches, and, you know, I pull guys to the side, just motivate them when I feel like they down. You know, I just try to be like a big brother to them and just let them know what I've been going through or what I've been through. And what you're going through right now is nothing. You can get through it. You know, I just try to be the motivator out there.
So what's the biggest message you're trying to pass along to the team this week leading into the NCAA tournament? You know, having that experience and then your full career that you've had, what's kind of the biggest message for this stage for this group?
This group, I've just been letting them know, like, you got to be together, like a string. When one person moves, the next person got to move. If y'all on the same page, you can be successful in the tournament. I think that's what made us be successful in 2001 is that we was on the same page. We was hungry for it. We was talking. We was constantly talking to each other, you know, and just bringing it together. And I think if our guys just understand that part of it and come together and talk to each other and just be excited for each other on each other's success, and I think they can. The sky's the limit down here. It's an opportunity. I like our region that we have. I like the situations we in. And I think these guys can really do something special if they all just lock in.
Now, do you think it's an advantage or a disadvantage to play a team that's playing in the first four? Andy didn't really specify whether he thought it was. It's a little bit less preparation, but it's a team that, you know, has to play a game, you know, 2 days before. Maybe that gives them a little bit of an advantage because they, you know, they're used to the environment. They get that atmosphere. They get the jitters out a little bit earlier. Do you think it's an advantage or disadvantage playing a first four team?
I don't know. It's kind of up in the air with me. You know, I know, like Kansas, remember, they in a bad situation, you know, and that, which is, I think, is a good thing as far as for us. If we continue, we win our first round. If they win their first round, but I think it's going to be tough for them, you know, because you can't practice and you got to go through the protocols and stuff. So I think it's kind of upsetting and sad that they have to go through that because the preparation is not going to be there. But for a team like us that's healthy and ready to go, we can take advantage of that. And that's why I think it's a unique situation right now. And I think, like I said, we got the opportunity to do something special.
You guys are heading into the tournament with one of the best players in the country in Evan Mobley, a guy that's going to be a top three draft pick in a few months. Have you ever played with someone like Evan Mobley? I mean, you've played with some really good players with the Spurs. You play with Tim Duncan. Is there a guy that he reminds you of, or is there anyone that has a similar skill set that you've seen play?
Like, I compare him to, like, Anthony Davis. You know, I never played with a guy like Anthony Davis, but I've seen him play. And that's my similarities that I feel like he can be Anthony Davis type guy. You know, he's going to get there. He's going to get stronger. Mm-hmm. And I think as long as Evan just continue to be aggressive, he's going to be an amazing player in the NBA.
Tell me a little bit about his personality, because it's very rare that you have a superstar that's so unselfish. But it seems like, and I've talked with Chris Kapko and Andy about this in the past, is it's unique that you have a superstar that you're trying to push him to be more aggressive. And that's what you're not really working on, you know, all the skill sets. It's the biggest thing to him being successful is getting that aggression to come out a little bit more. How unique is it to have a player like that, and how much of a challenge is it as a coach to try to get that out of him?
I mean, with Evan, Evan's quiet, but, like, you know, enjoy and have fun with the players. And, you know, people think he's just this quiet guy. No, Evan's just as normal as anybody else. He enjoys himself. He's a smart guy, and he's humble. You know, he's a humble guy, and he enjoy playing the game. And like you said, he's unselfish. He take the right shots. And at the next level, that's what they want. They don't want a thirsty person that's constantly, you know, a headache, a head case. And he's the perfect NBA guy. Whoever gets him going to love him, and they're going to enjoy having him. And we enjoy having him right now. You know, when I see that he's being cool on the court, I talk to him and tell him it's time to turn it up. It's time to be aggressive. You know, he look at me, I might nod his head, say, okay. And he go out there and play. He's a great kid, and I like the way he carries himself, and I think that he carries himself the right way.
Yeah, I just think it's really unique that, you know, usually when you have a superstar, they want the ball all the time. They're ready to take every shot, and he's just so unselfish with it, which makes him so unique. And, you know, he's the unicorn. You know, that's what Earl Watson said earlier this season. And, you know, on the Pac-12 networking, he said, if you've got a unicorn, there's no limits to what you can do. So we'll be interesting to see what, you know, he and the rest of the Trojans can do in the NCAA tournament. You know, speaking of the NBA, I wanted to touch on your playing career. You played a little bit with the Supersonics. You played for the Spurs. It was only a handful of games. You know, granted, it's not the experience that you hope for, but what did it mean to you to be able to play at the highest level?
It meant everything for me. You know, all I really wanted to do growing up was just play in the NBA. And I actually had two seasons. They were cut short because of injuries and being the last guy on the roster, you know, being that 10th, 15th guy on the roster, that'd be the frustrating part because, you know, you never really get the opportunity to show unless somebody get hurt. And if they don't get hurt, you know, you just be there waiting the opportunity. But I was just being excited, just being able to be in the NBA and make it. You know, that was my whole dream when I was little. That's what I was working for during college and getting myself prepared for that. And I got the opportunity. It didn't happen right away. I didn't get drafted, but I kept working. And that's what I kept doing. I just kept working and working until it happened. And I got the opportunity. Popovich was awesome. I enjoyed being around the guys like Tim Duncan, Tony Parker, Ginobili. I was able to learn a lot from them. To this day, you know, I speak to them every now and then. And, you know, I enjoyed myself, especially when I was at the Supersonics. I was able to play with another great player, Ray Allen, Rashad Lewis. So I was playing behind the best of the best. So I feel like I did my job, and I feel like I accomplished what I wanted to accomplish. I didn't get to play like I wanted to, but, you know, I was still there. Everybody enjoyed me. You know, I had a lot of stuff to prove, and I proved myself, and I made it happen. So I was just, you know, happy to be able to do it, period.
Getting to the highest level is something that, you know, so many people strive for and very few are actually able to do. So, you know, even though it wasn't a 15-year NBA career or anything, you know, just being able to make it to the top level is quite an accomplishment. You did have a 15 or so year career as far as professional basketball, and you played all over the place. I mean, just looking at the list, I think you would have to use a pen and paper to write down all the places, instead of coming off the top of your head. I'm going to list a couple of them just from looking through Wikipedia and a couple other sites. But Greece, Belgium, Poland, you played in the D-League for a little bit, Puerto Rico, Croatia, Israel, Kosovo, Russia, Spain, Dominican Republic, Argentina, Colombia, Venezuela, Saudi Arabia, all over the globe. What was the experience like, as kind of a traveling basketball player and playing in a different league, you know, a lot of times every year, every other year, and just kind of exploring the globe as you go about your career?
Sure. I enjoyed going to those different places. And one of my best places was Israel. I enjoyed Israel. It kind of made you feel like you were at home and that Miami feeling. And it was Americanized. That was my favorite place. But a lot of the places why you see so many teams, I would go to the D-League, playing the D-League. When the D-League season was over, then I would leave overseas to go play on them teams. So that's why a lot of those teams I played on, it was just like, okay, I got 3 months left of basketball. Let me go sign and play over here and go sign and play over there to make some extra money. Because if you look at it, you're like, dang, Dez was moving around a lot. No. I was just, you know, when I get done playing here, I would go to the next spot. And they would call me and ask me would I come play. I was just hungry to play. And I wanted to just, you know, get the most I could out of playing basketball. So I just took advantage of it. And I enjoyed going to those places. They made me feel at home. And, you know, that's the basketball life. You know, if you want to make money and take care of your family, you know, you got to go through certain situations to do it.
What was kind of the biggest experience, what was the biggest learning experience for you, seeing different locations, different people? What was kind of the biggest learning experience that you took away from it as a life lesson, maybe?
My experience was just going over there and, like, sometimes you go over to places and they lose sponsorships and they can't pay you, so you got to be there for months without getting paid. Like, that was my experience, and that's what I was like, I am blessed to be playing in America because people don't know that it's tough overseas when, because they run their leagues off sponsorships and stuff like that. At any given month, a sponsor might just leave the team, and just now you're there not getting paid.
Wow.
So that was my biggest experience. It's just like, okay, you just got to watch where you go and make sure they have all their dots and T's crossed so you can at least make your money that you're over there trying to make. And so that was like my biggest like experience of, and just being away from your family, you know, it's hard, you know, being able to communicate with everybody, being over there, you know. But like I said, it made me a stronger person, and it made me be able to go through adversity and other situations and be able to handle it and come out okay.
Yeah, you played in a number of different places. You played in different leagues, but this year has been so unique in so many different ways, just because of the COVID, the protocols and everything. What's been the biggest challenge, I guess, or, you know, what's been the most unique thing about this season, being on the bench and traveling with a team once again, when there's so many different protocols, you basically can't leave the hotel rooms or anything. What's kind of been the hardest challenge for you?
Not getting COVID. The biggest challenge is just not getting COVID, because, you know, that it will hurt the team. It will hurt the program. So you want to make sure you do everything the right way. You know, make sure you're not going in around a crowd of people. Make sure you just stay in your little bubble. And I think that was one of the hardest things. I know, because guys wanted to go home and see their family. You can't go home and be with your family like you want to. And I think, like I said, my hat's off to all our guys, because they didn't do what we're supposed to do. We had one situation this whole year. I think that's a blessing. We was able to get most of all our games in, and you know, a lot of these schools wasn't able to do that. So I'm just happy that our guys went through the protocols the right way and did what we were supposed to do, so we can to put us in the situation we're in right now. It's awesome. I mean, that was the only challenging part, I think, for all of us.
Yeah, getting COVID is something that could definitely hurt the team. But also for you, it was even more personal than that. You had a son that was born during the pandemic, and he had some autoimmune issues. What was it like for you kind of dealing with this pandemic as a father, knowing that your son has some immune issues?
It was scary. You know, it was scary at one point when I was deciding to be a GA for the team. I had to really think about the situation, and I talked to my family about it. Everybody encouraged me and just told me to just keep going through the protocols, you know, be safe, do the right thing. And they support me. You know, it was scary at one point, cause you know, if I did got COVID, I wouldn't be able to be around my son. I wouldn't be able to go visit my son while he was in the hospital in the bubble. So it was, you know, it was definitely scary for me. But like I said, I had the support of the school, of the team. Everybody knew my situation. So everybody made sure I was in a safe situation, and it worked out. You know, I'm here to this day. I haven't caught COVID, thank God. And, you know, my family is safe, and everybody is still safe, and we ready to rock and roll.
Well, glad to hear that everyone's doing well. You made the decision to join, and obviously you said that was a little bit of a tough decision with the situation going on at home, to become, you know, a grad assistant with this team, working on your master's in communication management. You know, what is the end goal for you? You know, being on the bench with this group, you know, learning from the coaching staff that's there. What do you want to get out of this experience, and what do you hope to, you know, hope it will lead to in the future?
Yeah, I'm hoping to become a coach, and one day I'm hoping to be a head coach, to be able to run my own program and teach these kids everything I know and everything I experience. You know, I'm enjoying learning from Andy, Jason Hart, and Capco, and Eric Mobley. You know, it's a lot of things that I didn't know as a coach that coaches go through that I know now. And it's just like, this is everything I wanted to do. I wanted to learn before I put my foot out there and do everything it takes to become the coach. I'm enjoying it. I'm going to continue my process and my journey on trying to become a coach. And I think I'm doing the right things. I think I'm in a great situation with being with my university that I, you know, graduated from and having the opportunity to be here. You know, I'm blessed. I'm actually just blessed to be here.
Can you give us one good example of something that kind of stood out to you that what you know, you didn't expect as a, you know, learning from the coaches?
How much time you spend in the office? Like you be in the office all day. You be in the office all day just watching film and, you know, you got a lot, but you do have a lot of, I don't know if it's just the COVID situation, but it was just like being up, getting tested in the mornings. It was just, I know this is not how it really is. I know we're in a unique situation and a weird situation, but, you know, like I said, all the downtime that you have, I didn't really know you had a lot of downtime.
All right, one last one for you. Tell me, who is the most important player for USC? Which player needs to play well in this NCAA tournament run for this team to be at its best going on a run in the tournament?
Who are most important player?
Yeah, who's the guy that needs to step up and play up to his potential for you guys to play up to your potential as a team?
To be honest, I think everybody's important. You know, I know Evan's going to do what he's going to do. And I think if we all follow his lead and feed off him, I think we got a great opportunity to be successful. He's like top five pick. He's going to draw all the attention. Like I would have loved to play with a guy that was top five and I can be able to take open shots and be open all the time. And I mean, I think once the guys embrace that and see that if we run our offense through him, it helps you. And once they embrace that, I think everybody is needed in this tournament. That's how you get far.
Awesome. Thanks so much to Desmond Farmer for joining us and giving us a little insight into his previous experiences in the NCAA tournament, making a run to the Elite Eight with the 2001 team. And we'll see if this year's Trojans can do the same, if they can make a run in the NCAA tournament. Starting on Saturday, they will play the winner of the Wichita State and Drake game, the first four game that will take place on Thursday. To close out the show, let's take a look at that matchup between Wichita State and Drake. The Wichita State Shockers, one of the nation's worst teams in field goal percentage actually this season, which could play into USC's benefit there because USC has one of the best field goal percentage defenses in the nation. Wichita State was 16-5. They had a bunch of games, you know, postponed or canceled during conference play due to COVID positives at other schools. You know, they were 14-3 after starting 1-2 with some shorthanded players out with their own COVID issues. So they're a team that has played really well down the stretch when they've been able to play. Obviously, the big storyline early in the season for Wichita State was that their head coach, Greg Marshall, had resigned in November after an investigation into physical and verbal abuse for some previous players. But they have rebounded. They've come together after that situation. This is a team, a program that has, you know, been to 8 of the last 9 NCAA tournaments, but no one on this roster has actually played in an NCAA tournament game, so not going to be a bunch of experience there. They are used to playing close games, though. They played a number of games really tight this season, and they've got a unique playmaker in Tyson Etienne. He hits more than 3 three-pointers per game. He's shooting nearly 40%, and he averages over 17 points a game. So they're a team to watch out for if they can get him going. They do play good defense. They don't turn the ball over very much. So those are things that USC, you know, will have to attack against, but they're not very good rebounding either. They're negative margin on the season, so that's an area where USC might be able to attack as well. That's if Wichita State can get past Drake. Now, Drake, on the other hand, the team from Iowa, who Andy Enfield the other day was like, I think they're in Iowa. Not exactly sure, but he was honest about it. They are in Iowa indeed. Drake comes from Des Moines, if you prefer Des Moines, whichever way you want to say it there. The Bulldogs from Des Moines don't turn the ball over. They force you to beat them instead of beating themselves. They average 77 points per game, 45th in the nation, and they also hold opponents to 64 points per game. So, you know, they have a pretty good margin of victory there as well. They're one of the top shooting teams in the nation, which should be a complete contrast to Wichita State, which would be interesting in that matchup in that first four game. But they shoot at 49.4%, 12th in the nation, and one of the reasons why is because they go and attack the basket. They're really good at two-point shots. They make 54.4% of their two-point shots, which is 29th in the nation, while USC is second in the nation in two-point defense at 42%. So that should be an interesting battle back and forth there, the potential of that if USC is to play Drake. Now, Drake, they're missing some players. You know, Roman Penn, their point guard, was top 20 in assists, averaging over 5 assists a game, 2.43 assist to turnover ratio, out for the season with a foot injury. Unfortunate for them. They also have been without Shaquan Hemphill, who's averaging 14.1 points, their leading rebounder at 6.3 rebounds. Expected to be back on Thursday. We'll see, you know, what condition he's in, how many minutes he can play. You know, he's been out for about a month now. They hope to have him back as well. In the meantime, they've had a guy step up, and that's been Joe Yusufu, moved into the starting lineup. He's averaging 23.1 points in his last 7 games, so he's been a big boost for them. We'll see if he gets going in that first game, and that's going to be the interesting part of that first four. Is it a good thing or a bad thing to play an opponent that's playing in the first four game? They do get a little bit of experience, get the jitters out, and if someone starts hitting some shots, then that gives them confidence going into that second game. So watch out for guys like DJ Wilkins for Drake. You know, he makes over 2 threes a game. Tyson Etienne from Wichita State and Yusufu, if those guys can get going, then maybe they become dangerous threats to USC that USC is going to have to try to shut down. But that's a quick look at the matchup that will be taking place on Thursday. All eyes should be on that one first for USC, and then the coaches will try to put together a scouting report as quick as they can, turn it around in 48 hours, and USC will play on Saturday at 1:30 p.m. Pacific time on TNT. They'll be taking on the winner of that Wichita State-Drake game to begin the NCAA tournament. If they win that, then they could potentially match up with either Kansas or Eastern Washington, which is the 3-14 matchup. Now, Kansas has been dealing with some COVID issues. They don't know if they're going to have all their players for their first game. Will they have everyone back for the second game? Still kind of up in the air, but how much are they being able to practice this week? They obviously had to shut things down last week when they had a COVID positive during the Big 12 tournament and had to pull out of that tournament. How much are they practicing this week? Are they going to be a little bit rusty going into that Saturday game that they play? That'll be something to keep an eye on as well. USC potentially could get a little bit of an advantage there with the fact that they're playing consistently and haven't had any stoppages in a while. So we'll see how this section of the bracket shakes out this weekend. There's the potential of if USC wins a couple games, they could face off against the 2 seed in the bracket, Iowa, or even number 7 seed in the bracket, Oregon. You know, Oregon's a unique team, and they'll be tough to defend if they go up against Iowa. Could be a Pac-12 matchup in the Sweet 16 there. And then this is obviously the West Region bracket, which the number 1 seed overall in the tournament is in, and the number 1 seed in the West, Gonzaga, who's been number 1 all season, undefeated. Can anyone beat them on the path to the Final Four? That'll be a big question mark in the Elite Eight. If USC is to make it that far, you know, they would equal the 2001 team, and we'll see if that 20-year magic, if they can push themselves over a little bit further into the Final Four, just like Desmond Farmer thinks they have the capability of doing. But that's going to wrap it up for this edition of the Heard It on the Sidelines podcast, part of the Peristyle podcast family. I'm your host, Shotgun Spratling, saying thank you again to Desmond Farmer for jumping on and joining us, and thanks to all you for listening. We hope you'll be back to join us for the next episode of the Heard It on the Sidelines podcast. Peace.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can waste another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can conquer it. I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. Any road. The steeper, the better. Because my all-new Santa Fe is available with H-Track all-wheel drive, so I can hit the trail without a worry in the world. Heck, with 3 rows and best-in-class rear cargo space, I can pack the whole family in with all our gear. We've got available dual wireless charging for our phones, so we'll never lose touch with civilization, and we won't lose touch with the primordial power of Mother Earth. So which is it? Waste the weekend? Or do something a little more epic and conquer it in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.